Translation: Dadyansha's invincible protective covering, known as the Narayan Kavacha, was given to Tvasta, who delivered it to his son, Vishvarup, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayan Kavacha, Dadichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. So who is speaking right now? Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is speaking in response to the requests of the demigods. Yusmabhyam yachito svibhyam dharmagyong ganidasyati tatastar ayudha shristo vishvakarma vinirmita yena vritta siroharta mateja upabrimhita. When the Ashwini Kumars beg for Dadyansha's body, so Dadyansha and Dadichi seem to be the same person, same way to pronounce the name. When the Ashwini Kumars beg for Dadyansha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for Dadyansha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dadyansha awards you his body, Vishvakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Vritrasura because it will be invested with my power. So now today's chanted verse. Tasmin vinihate yuyam. Tasmin vinihate yuyam. Tejostra yudha sampada. Bhuya prapsyata bhadram vau. Bhuya prapsyata bhadram vau. Nahing sang ti chamat paran. Nahing tan ti chamat paran. Tasmin vini hate yuyam. Tejo stra yudha sampadaha. Bhuya prapsyata bhadram vo. Nahim santi chamat paran. Bolo. Tasmin vinihate yuyam. Tejasa yuta sampada. Tasmin, when he, Vritrasura, Vinihate, is killed, Yuyam, all of you, Tejaha, power, Astra, arrows, Ayudha, other weapons, Sampada, and opulence, Bhuya, again, Prapsyata, will obtain, Bhadram, all good fortune, Va, unto you, Na, not, Himsanti, hurt, Cha, also, Matparan, my devotees. Translation: when Vritrasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Please repeat. When Vritrasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Purport. A devotee of the Lord is never envious of anyone, what to speak of other devotees. As revealed later, Vritrasura was also a devotee. Therefore, he was not expected to be envious of the demigods. Indeed, of his own accord, he would try to benefit the demigods. A devotee does not hesitate to give up his own body for a better cause. Chanakya Pandit said, Sannimite varam chago vinashe niyate sati. After all one's material possessions, including this body, will be destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, if the body and other possessions can be utilized for a better cause, a devotee never hesitates to give up even his own body. Because Lord Vishnu wanted to save the demigods, Vritrasura, even though able to swallow the three worlds, would agree to be killed by the demigods. For a devotee, there is no difference between living and dying, because in this life, a devotee engages in devotional service, and after giving up his body, he engages in the same service in the spiritual world. His devotional service is never hindered. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amal Purana. Means that it has no contamination of what we call Kaitava Dharma, or cheating religious system. So what is a cheating religious system? It's kind of a what we call in English an oxymoron. An oxymoron are two words together that don't agree, right? Like, military intelligence, they say, is an oxymoron. Or something like jumbo shrimp, right? So, cheating religion sounds like a contradiction. How could religion be cheating? Well, Bhagavatam explains that in this world, many people, they use religion or dharma for kam, artha, moksha, for gratification, for personal things. You see, if someone is not completely gross, then they must have God in the picture. Even their enjoyment, God must be there. They will not be like, only an asura or a rakshasa, they will enjoy without Bhagawan. But in this world, if someone has some punya, some sukriti, so then they want to enjoy wife, children, money, but they want to do it with some piety, with God. Because they know without God you cannot really enjoy. It is impossible to enjoy nicely. So even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the qualities of the asura. He says, so many people I've killed, I'm surrounded by my beautiful family. And then he says, I will give some charity. Krishna is explaining the demon. And he's saying, I will give some charity. So even the demon, the asura, is thinking, I will do some good work. In this way, I will enjoy. So, that shows you that even if one is in the grossest darkness of ignorance, one has to go through the motions of being religious. Right? Otherwise, why an asura is saying in the same breath, I will kill my enemy, he is killed, and I will give some charity and enjoy like that. Because we're all spirit soul. We're all jiva, servants of Krishna. So it is within our intrinsic nature that we must be a servant. So even when we have totally lost the point, we have to pretend that we understand the importance of service. Even in the darkness of ignorance, there's service to others. So if we take a step back and we look at the context of today's verse, what's happening right now? So we may ask, what is the value? We should always try to think critically when we're reading Prabhupada's books, and don't take it on face value. We have to take a step back and we have to ask ourselves, we have to be thoughtful and say, so what is the lesson here? Just like in our own lives, what makes us different, what makes the devotee different from the non-devotee is that when a non-devotee suffers, he thinks, why is this happening to me? But not like, why is this happening to me? It's why is this happening to me as in this should not be happening to me. What is wrong with God? Why he's letting this happen to me? Why God is doing this to me? So when we become angry, even sometimes you bang your toe and you're like, you're angry. Who are we angry at, really? Right? We're really angry at God. We don't like to say it, but who else we're yelling at? We're not angry at ourselves. We're angry at why this had to happen. Come on. Sometimes we'll say, come on. I'll catch myself. If I'm doing something and I'm trying to balance some plates and soap and walk from the ashram sink and it all falls, I'll be like, come on. If my consciousness is not good. So who am I? I'm not saying it to me. I'm saying, Krishna, come on. Was that really necessary? I'm doing so much. I'm trying to serve you. So that, unfortunately, is our condition. We hold God responsible for our when we are not acting as devotees. But a devotee, when we have difficulty, what a devotee does when something bad happens is we think, what is Krishna trying to teach me? It's not why you are doing this to me. It is, my Lord, I know you love me. You're God. You're the source of all affection. And it's not possible for you to be petty or unkind or whimsical. So I'm going to just shut my mind down for a moment. And I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm going to ask, what was the lesson here? Oh, don't try to carry 17 things at once. Could that be the lesson, my dear Abhay? Yes, actually that's true. I have this habit. I do too many things and I do a poor job of all of them because I'm trying to do everything to save time because I think it's going to be in my interest. So Krishna's teaching me, relax. Do each thing well. Do it carefully. Don't worry. I'll make sure you have enough time. You could do everything. So that is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, is that whatever happens, it could be we lose a 50 rupee note or we could lose our father. It doesn't matter how small, how big, we stop and we think, what is Krishna trying to tell me here? Because I'm his devotee, I'm chanting his holy name, it's impossible for him to cause me. I have to just go deeply. And someone may say, is it necessary that he causes us to suffer to teach us? Actually, yes. Unfortunately, you know that in advertising, they've done studies for 100 years. In America especially, America's a land of how to extract money from others. So they've spent billions of dollars. How to do it. The science, studying psychology. So they found that people move away from fear even more than moving towards pleasure. Fear is a greater motivator than attraction. Bhaya is stronger than calm, even. And that's why in commercials, they play on that. Fear. oh, you must buy this, or you know, you must buy this air cooler, and they'll show a picture of the baby sleeping nicely by the air cooler because you want your baby to get heat rash, would you? You rascal father, you must buy the best cooler, or you must buy this lock, and they'll show like the gundas coming, like trying to break the lock, and they can't, and they leave, and inside the family is all happy. Right? It's like television commercials in America. So that works, fear. So we respond to distress, unfortunately. When you get cut or you get a disease, it hurts. There's pain. So we take care of it. Can you imagine if Krishna designed our body so there was no pain? You get a big cut, you'd be like, your friend is like, you have a big cut. And you're like, yeah. I can't go. I'm going next week. No, the important things, Krishna designs it because we don't listen. We're lazy, unfortunately. So we are motivated through suffering. Right? I mean, otherwise, Krishna, if you look at the material world, Bhavasagara, how it works. You know, Krishna could sit us down in a corner of the spiritual world and say, you know, this is really not a good idea, going to the material world. Trust me. You know, it's not going to work. So much trouble. But he doesn't, because it wouldn't work. Because we'd be like, no, I love you, but I just want to see. I'm just going. I'm just seeing the quality, as they say in the clothing shop. No, no. No buying. No buying. Just looking. Right? Sari shop. No, no, no buying. No buying. It's like he won't let you buy. You're just seeing the quality. Sit. Right? So we're like that. We would be like that. Krishna, I'm not buying. I'm just seeing the quality. Material world. No serious transaction. So Krishna creates this horrible place, this terrible place called the material world, which is suffering at every step. Krishna in the Gita, he very honestly says, Dukalayam ashashvatam. So what can you do? It's miserable and it's temporary. You cannot change it. No amount of effort or labor will change the Lord's explanation of the world. So it's very bad news for those of us who want to enjoy. It means there's no hope for us. So the Bhagavatam, we may ask, okay, the demigods, they're in trouble, and they're coming to Lord Vishnu. So what's the story here? What can we learn from this Leela in Bhagavatam? What is the message here? So it's very interesting. It's important to understand that the demigods, that for Vaishnavs, especially Gaudiya Vaishnavs, it's not a very admirable position, actually. In previous ages, and the general Janasangha of the world in different yugas, generally, to go to Indralok, to go to Swarg, to become a deva, this is the perfection. This is lifetimes of yajna. Swimming pools of ghee you will pay for the Brahmins to pour into the fire, the mouth of Lord Vishnu, to get to the top and enjoy. But for the Gaudiya Vaishnav in Kali Yuga, because there's no Gaudiya Vaishnavs at any other yuga, only Kali Yuga you'll find the Gaudiya Vaishnavs. We don't like it. We don't want it. We wouldn't accept it. Even if Krishna brought us a flower airplane and said, now you be king of heaven. You become king of heaven. You please accept. The devotee will go, no. Not interested. Not interested. And if Krishna said, no, you don't understand. You'll enjoy for many days of Brahma and you will not lose your devotional service. In the end, you'll come back to me. Still, the devotee will not accept. Because where's the capacity for devotional service? It's a disqualification to have a body like Indra or Agni and the beautiful Apsaras. It's a distraction. One cannot be Krishna conscious in this situation. And the demigods, you see, their relationship with Lord Vishnu, it's enviable, but at the same time, we don't like it, nor do we understand it. The demigods have a personal relationship with Vishnu. And that's the problem. is that they're over-familiar with the Lord. They can speak to the Lord. So therefore, they become very arrogant. Devotees of Lord Chaitanya, we don't approach the Lord directly. We go through the spiritual master and the other Vaishnavas. We're not interested to be alone with the Lord. It has to be in the context of other devotees. Even in the spiritual world, if we love Krishna as a baby, we're doing it because Mother Yasoda has given Krishna to us for a while to look after him while she is doing something in the kitchen. It's not that we become Mother Yasoda, now we're Krishna's mother. No. Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, they're like very happy. Oh, here's our favorite uncle. Oh, you're free? Here, can you hold Krishna for the afternoon? I would have to take care of something. You're like, okay, yes, I'll look after him. Don't worry. He's mine. So it's in the context of the parents of the Lord. So there's no, like, it's just me and you against the world, as the song goes. So you can see in this leela, this becomes so prominent and evident. This leela particularly explains this point. Indra is in his palace and he's enjoying. That's his service, to enjoy. Wine, woman and song, somaras and apsaras and music, heavenly music. And his spiritual master, Brihaspati, the saintly, knowledgeable Brihaspati comes, and what does he do? He neglects him. He doesn't get off his throne. He ignores him, basically. Okay, boom. Strike number one. That's the beginning of the story. Guru Aparad. It's so serious. Okay? So then he looks around. Why? Why do they get nervous? Is it Prem Bhakti? Why do the devis get nervous that they've offended their guru? It's all calculated. It's based on sense gratification. Because they realize this is setting the stage to become weak, martially, in war. And we will be harmed by the asuras. So this is constantly the position of the heavenly planets. It's constant war. There's always war, anxiety, battle. It's not just like in the Vrindavan. There may be our mind, there may be aparads, but we have no real conflict. We have Mahaprasad and the holy name and the Vaishnavas and Prabhupada and the deities, and life is good. Our struggle is our mind. We have to fight against our material desire, but it's not like we have armies of people coming to kill us or take away our japa beads, you know? So it's relatively easy. We're just enjoying and we're with our friends, and the whole of Vrindavan are devotees. Such an amazing thing. There may be different challenges, but Vrindavan, where will you find in the world a city of devotees of Krishna? Everyone loves Krishna. What an amazing thing. Wherever you go, everyone loves Krishna. Who doesn't love Krishna? Even someone who externally doesn't seem absorbed in sadhana bhakti. Just talk to them for a little while. You'll see they love Krishna and Radharani. So what a good fortune to live in a city of devotees. Because I'll tell you, living in the West, in America, of cities of non-devotees, it's like being in hell. I cannot even put words to explain what it's like. But to be in a city of devotees. So, Indra, the devas, is not like that. So, they're worried about their sense gratification. And they go, and instead they look for Brihaspati, and then, oh, we can't find him. Now, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, if we don't find our guru, we don't go, okay, I guess we need another spiritual master. Oh, can't find him. Oh, it's already been a day we're looking. No, we'll be like, where's my Guru Maharaj? I have to talk to him. But they're like, okay, we need another one. Okay, so talk to Brahma. Yeah, you get this Vishvaroop. You know, he'll do. It's like, okay, another guru, great. All right. It's like, wow, you got over that pretty quickly. Your loss of Brihaspati. Like, you're not correcting the error. You're just getting a new one. It's like if you get in an argument with your guru, and you, instead of going and offering obeisances and begging forgiveness, you're like, what other gurus are there in ISKCON? It's like, okay, well, I'll pick him, and if I get in a fight with him, look, there's so many. I'll just switch. So, but that's the devas, because they're thinking in terms of strategy and war. They can't afford to be Rasika Vaishnavas. So it's a curse. So then what happens is, oh, now they're fixed up. They're correcting their mistakes. They have Vishvarupa. They have a new guide, a Brahmin and a guru, and they're not going to make the same mistake that they made before. No way. No, they already offended the last one, not this time. Uh-oh. Well, because they weren't discriminating, and because they're in an emergency condition, they had to accept a guru who also had some Asura blood. And they knew that. So then when he was doing the yajna for the devas, then what happened? Vishvarupa, because his mother was an Asura, so he was quietly giving some ghee for the Asuras. And of course, Lord Indra, he's learned his lesson, how to be respectful, and what does he do? He chops his three heads off, kills them. Right there, during the yajna. How horrific is this? It's going from bad to worse. He's gone from offending his spiritual master to cutting off the heads of the officiating, you know, acharya at the yajna. So it's like, you see, it is just, for us, for Gaudiyas, it's not proper behavior. And then he gets in so much trouble, and then this big demon comes. Tvasta, the father, he's like, this is not right. You should not have done this. So then he creates the demon Vritrasura, who is amazing. Because Vritrasura is Marshchitraketu, a dear devotee of the Lord. Nard Muni and Lord Shankarshan. So they're facing a devotee demon. Then all of a sudden, what happens? They go to Lord Vishnu. They're like, oh, you know, actually one should go to a guru when one has difficulty, but they decided not to do that time, the third time. First guru came, offended him. The second time they got a guru, killed him. And now they're like, okay, well, let's just go directly to Lord Vishnu. So you see, this is not the mentality of devotees, actually. We don't mean to criticize. They're great souls. But Lord Chaitanya has given us such a high standard of bhakti. Bhakti that we can enter into Goloka Vrindavan. So we have to see it in that, with those eyes, and analyze from the perspective of followers of Lord Chaitanya. So from that side, this is not. And the proof, you may say, okay, don't be offensive to the devas, but the story, the conclusion of the story, is that ultimately the demon devotee wins. He loses the battle, but he wins the war, you could say. Because the war is against the mind and against Maya. So Vritrasura won that war. And Indra, at the end, offers prayers where he acknowledges that actually Vritrasura won. So even a devotee who's in a demonic body is better situated than a deva. Because a devotee will never have a consciousness which is displeasing to the Lord. And you may say, well, the Lord awarded the weapon, he gave them, you know, so he must have been happy. Okay, so now let's listen. This is verse 47. Okay. All right, so the demigods have killed both of their instructor gurus, and they've come to Lord Vishnu, and they offer beautiful prayers. Actually, the prayers that are offered by the devas are very nice, and the Lord is pleased. He says, Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O beloved demigods, you've offered your prayers to me in great knowledge, and I am certainly most pleased with you. A person is liberated by such knowledge, and thus remembers my position, which is above the conditional life. Such devotee is fully purified by offering prayers to me in full knowledge. This is the source of devotional service to me. So Lord Vishnu, he's listening to the devas who are in a lot of trouble, and they made the trouble for themselves. So he says, okay, I like your prayers, thank you very much, because you have so much knowledge. Now we know Krishna, in the 11th canto of the Uddhava Gita, he says that there are two types to communicate. There's direct communication and indirect communication. And he says, Krishna tells Uddhava that I prefer the indirect form of communication. Right? And you'll see that someone who is cultured and civilized, they will speak like this. Like our Radharaman Maharaj. Right? You spend time with him, talk with him. He'll never become angry or use a critical word, but he communicates. If he has disapproval, he says it in such a way that you indirectly understand. He will not directly say it. Also, our Dharmatma Prabhu, you'll see, never a cross word or angry word or critical word, because he's a gentleman. He's cultured. Somehow or other, I don't know his background, but he's received that culture also. Many of our devotees in the temple. Of course, you can also maybe, if you look very hard, find one devotee somewhere hiding who will speak a critical word of another. It's possible. We cannot say. But we guess, perhaps. But this is... So, Lord Vishnu, let's read between the lines. So he's saying, yes, thank you for the prayers. I love these prayers because you're so smart. Right? Indirectly, he's almost... And then the next shloka, he says, O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed on me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. So the Lord is not chastising. He is actually, but only the devotee can understand. The devas don't understand the context. They're like, okay, are you going to kill him or not? Can we get to the point here? Did it work? Did the prayers work? But the devotee can hear that the Lord is saying, you're so intelligent, and you know that if you please me, I'll give you anything. And that's why intelligent devotees never ask me for anything other than pure devotional service. And they're like, okay, yeah, okay, that's true. And? But we stick on this point. This is the... And Prabhupada says in the purport, indirectly the Lord is saying, this is what you should be doing with your intelligence. But... the problem is that they're too close to being gods. And this is our problem. Every one of us thinks that we are God. This is the problem. Now you may say, oh, this is, you're speaking too strongly. I don't think I'm God. I am very devoted. I know Bhagawan is there. But actually, this is the problem. To get a material body means you want to be God. And this is confirmed. This is confirmed earlier in this chapter. There's a nice shloka where this point is made. I think it's shloka 25. Okay. Yes. So these are the prayers. This is the prayers of the demigods. They say, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created us by his external potency and by whose mercy we expand the creation of the universe, is always situated before us as the Supersoul, but we cannot see his form. We are unable to see him because all of us think that we are separate and independent gods. So the Sanskrit for this is Samihata, of him who is acting, Pasyama, see, Lingam, the form, Pritak, separate, Isha, as controllers, Manina, thinking of ourselves. So this is the disease, that we are thinking that we are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada ends the purport to this verse by saying, we are all conditioned to various degrees, but we think that we are God. That is why we cannot understand who God is or see him face to face. I was reading just this morning before class, if you have a folio, Bhaktivedanta folio, a compilation of all of Prabhupada's books. So they also have many biographies there loaded into the folio. So there's a book, Radhadamodar Vilas, by Vyasaki Prabhu. It's about Jayananda and Vishnujan Swami. So Vishnujan Maharaj was a sannyasi who was in ISKCON previously in the early days. This quote, he was talking to a devotee, and he says that our challenge as devotees is not sex desire or intoxication or meat eating or gambling. He said, that's not the problem. He says, the problem is criticism. He said, because when you're in the mood of a devotee, you're meditating, you're chanting, saying, Krishna, please engage me in your service. Let me be your servant. Let me be your servant. Let me be your servant. But then when we criticize a devotee, we change that identity and we become a master who knows that someone else is doing something wrong. A servant will never criticize. A servant feels he doesn't have the right to criticize. But the moment we criticize, then Vishnu John Marsh says, that's when sex desire begins, right after the criticism. Because now you are someone who can criticize others. So you're also, now you're the enjoyer. And the mentality comes, and then the fall down comes. You know, it's very interesting. In the material world, there is something called nonviolent communication. And it is taught by someone called Marshall Rosenberg. He's passed away now. He met the devotees. He got prasadam. He's a very interesting man. He developed this type of this philosophy for mediators, people who were mediating between very difficult groups. In fact, he was successful with Israelis and Palestinians, Hindus and Muslims, people that could never sit down and talk. This man would sit at a table and get them talking to each other, and he would solve their problems. They would go away happy. He was an amazing man. So he wrote a book on his philosophy, how you can do this, how you can sit down between two groups that hate each other and get them to love each other. And he said something very interesting. He says, he explains that everything that people do in this world, everything, is a strategy to get unmet needs fulfilled. It's not good or bad, it's a strategy. It's a strategy that they learned somewhere that if I do this, I'll be happy. I will get this. It could have been from their mother, father, grandfather culture. And it is a strategy. He said, everyone, even though it looks like they're doing either bad or good work, it's a strategy to get a need fulfilled. He talked about basic human needs like liberty, autonomy, to be loved, to be valued, food, air, clean water. He talked about there's certain things we must have to survive, like a baby. If a baby is born and is not loved, held, touched, it will die. So there's certain needs we have, deep. So he said that everything somebody does is a strategy because they think it will get them happiness. And he said, so therefore you should never judge another human being. Because even it looks like they're doing something bad, they're simply engaged in a strategy to get an unmet need fulfilled. Now he said, you may think it's not a good strategy. You may think this is not a clever strategy, but it is a strategy nonetheless. And then he writes, he says, judgment is only for God. He says it's not for humans. That only God has a right to say, this is bad, this is good. We have no right to do that. So it's really nice. It's actually a beautiful spiritual idea. He's kind of taken that, he's given a word to a certain concept. I very much have been inspired. And many devotees have incorporated his teachings into conflict resolution within ISKCON. So this is such a nice idea because we'll be so safe. Can you imagine? You know, imagine we hear on the news, oh, some Muslim terrorist blew himself up, killed innocent people. And then we think that's very unfortunate. That he somehow or other was misled like that. You know? That he was thinking he would be able to please God by doing that. It's very unfortunate. Very, very unfortunate strategy. What a poor soul. What a poor soul. May he find peace next birth. So confused. Right? So instead of when we hear, we go, oh, that rascal, terrorist. Oh, he's like fanatic. We have to get rid of all these guys. We can't trust them. This other religion, you know, killing Hindus. You know, the solution is get rid of them. Or maybe we kill them first. Right? This is not spiritual. Spiritual means that we seek to understand. It's so easy to, with the big paintbrush of judgment, to paint everyone. But one will not get peace. And Vishnu John Marsh was saying that once you start to judge, then sex desire comes. It's a very interesting point. I copied and pasted into my nectar files, you know. I sometimes will save something that strikes me particularly I like, you know, in my computer, you know, cut it out and save it. So you can see that the devas are pound shilling pence, paisa wallas. It's all about what I have and don't take it or I'll kill you. Oh, you'll kill me, take what I... How can you be spiritual in that kind of environment? We respect them because they're Vaishnavs and they're doing a job. Someone has to do it. But as Gaudiyas, for our own lives, we want to go internally and we want to look and see why the Bhagavatam is telling this story. Because at the end, it turns everything on its face. And once again, the terrorist, Vritrasura, he's ultimately the Bhagavatam is saying, you please understand him. You don't judge this big monster who looks horrible and looks like he's going to kill the three worlds. No, you don't think like that. Go deeper. Go deeper. Go for the essence. Go for the essence. Bhagavatam is pushing us. So we do that in our daily lives. That's the idea. And that's the beautiful thing about the Bhagavatam is that we look at it, we take a step back and we see, what is the Lord trying to teach us? It's not just stories. What's the moral? When we finish a chapter, we should reflect. What was Krishna trying to say there? So in this case, it's that we have to be very careful. We don't want to be like the devas. Because it's temporary. This Indra that performed this act, he'll enjoy. And then it's described that at the end, then one falls down, comes back to the material world. Now you may say it's an amazing thing. How is it possible that devas see Lord Vishnu face to face? How is it that they then come back to this world and get entangled in birth and death? So that means that the exchange is not on a genuine platform. It's not genuine. It's business. It's administration. Because we see that other great devotees who see the Lord, like with us, if somehow, you know, if the Lord came and said, I will give you a weapon to defeat your enemies, we'd be like, huh, my Lord, oh Krishna, hold on, don't go, oh, I don't care. Like, we'd be so enwrapped in looking at the Lord. We'd be like smiling and just looking with love at the Lord. We'd be like not listening to what he's saying about the weapon. We'd be like, huh. We'd be so happy and we'd be like just walking towards him and want to, you know, be close to him, embrace him. That's a devotee. Not like, uh-huh, yeah, wait, whose bones? Yeah, okay, who's going to build the thunderbolt weapon? Okay, we got that, okay. Diji's bones. Okay, Vishvakarma, all right, anything else? Okay, thanks a lot, Jai, Haribol. And then going on. No, devotee, like Dhruva Maharaj. This is a devotee. Lord Vishnu didn't come to bestow love of Godhead externally. He was coming to fulfill his desire to have a kingdom. It was vengeance. It was righteous vengeance. Dhruva wanted to show his stepmother. I'll show you. How dare you talk to me like that? I'll show you who's a king. You belittle me? Humiliate me, a kshatriya? I'll show you what kind of kshatriya I am. Right? Yeah. Large and in charge. And then Lord Vishnu comes. And he's like, certainly, I will fulfill your desire. So was he like, woohoo! Yeah! It's like getting a weapon, like when Arjuna and the Pandavas get a weapon, they're like, yeah! Arjuna takes it back. There's one time where Arjuna is starting to show all the weapons he collected during his journey to collect weapons. And the Pandavas are like, break them out, let's see them. And he starts showing the weapons and the whole universe starts to break apart. And the demigods come and say, please, you don't. Pandava brothers, please, you wait until the battle. And we promise you will see all the weapons that Arjuna has collected. Do not just show them to your brothers. And they're like, okay, all right, put them away. So it wasn't like that. Dhruva Maharaj was overcome seeing his Lord because he was a devotee. Yes, he was a kshatriya, and he was insulted, and he was in that situation. But he was a devotee. And the proof was, when the Lord came with the stuff, the treasure, the jewels, you can be king of the world forever. Dhruva's like looking at the Lord and tears are coming from his eyes and he's in love with the Lord. And he's totally satisfied. It's like, I have the darshan of my Lord. And he's like, this is like broken glass. I thought it was jewels before, but actually it's broken glass. No, please don't. I have no interest in that. So that's a devotee. That's what the Bhagavatam explains, is the reaction of the devotee. Not they see the Lord and they just, it's like a grocery list. And then they leave. And then the devas, who knows what happens? They come back to the material world and then one day they have to become genuine devotees. And their relationship with the Lord has to be not in an administrative capacity. So this is what we learn. And it's also interesting to note and to confirm, go deeper into the pastime. So we see that what is the solution? What saves them? Right? What saves them? What are they instructed? What is it Lord Vishnu instructs them? That you ask for the bones of Dadichi and you make the thunderbolt weapon. Of course, bones, like they're dry and they become like powder. How you make a thunderbolt weapon, I have no idea. Of course, there's so many things in the story we cannot understand. And in fact, Sugadeva Goswami at the beginning of this story says that don't try to understand things. Just like when Vishvarupa had his head cut off, a couple of his heads turned into partridges. So anyway, what is the significance of Lord Vishnu telling the demigods that Dadichi's bones would save them? The significance is that this is where the whole thing began. Right? Vishvarupa, in order to protect them from the offense to Brihaspati, he invoked the Narayan Kavacha. Right? And where did the Narayan Kavacha come from? How did Vishvarupa get it? From Dadichi. So it's become full circle now. Lord Vishnu has not encouraged them in their, you know, trying to like, you know, take shortcuts around due process. So it's interesting, they come right back to where they were before they executed Vishvarupa. So this is the teaching. This is, we have to look deeply into Bhagavatam and see what is being told here. What is the lesson? And it is always wonderful. It shows us a way how we can personally achieve pure love of Godhead through proper respect and worship of the devotees and the spiritual master. Then, when we see the Lord, that'll be the moment that we're waiting for. If we just see the Lord now, how we'll be able to exchange with Krishna? How we can fully fall at his feet with genuine tears flooding the eyes? How we can have that moment, that precious moment, where we fully, it's exchange of hearts with the Lord. It only comes through the mercy of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master, he has that relationship. So he can show you. He can teach you. Like Dadichi had that mercy of Lord Narayan in the form of the Kavacha. He could give it. So they had to return to get it. And that is the lesson, is that to actually properly appreciate the darshan of the Lord, when that moment comes, it has to be given by one who actually has experienced and correctly and successfully met and loved the Lord. So, anyone has any comment or question? Yes, Prabhu? Criticize who? Thank you.
have a chance to break somebody and be really good at the foundation, I think it's very important to be together, the same mind and have the real vision of the vision.
Well, just as long as that judgmentalism isn't directed towards the devotees, then you're okay. If it's materialistic society, then there's no problem with that.
But if you notice that we have not told you the devotees, it means in the shastras, at least one of them in the devotees. For example, if we are not on the level of Paramatma.
I don't think you will find any shastric proof for criticizing devotees. Unless you would like to present it. No, that is different. That is different. If it is your service, then it's like you're a guru, and it's good. But if you just decide, you appoint yourself, that I'm the official criticizer of devotees, then that's not proper. If your service is to correct other devotees, then you may do it without karma. Yes. Like Burijan Prabhu, he once said something very nice. He said the same thing, is that all of us, if it's not your service, then you should never engage in criticism of any devotee. If it's your service, then that's fine. Chai. And generally, if we have to choose in our lives to err on the side of criticism or not, for us, because we have such a nature to criticize unnecessarily, we should be very careful. Because it's very easy to not discriminate. Because, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, don't worry about the shortcomings of others. He said, look into your own shortcomings. He said, that's the best use of that energy. You know? And then, when you get to the point where you have nothing left to criticize in yourself, then you can move on. Anyone else? Prabhuji? It's the consciousness. It's kind of, it's like a GBC meeting. You can say, is there any preaching going on in the GBC meetings? Not really. Not in the sense of like somebody preaching to someone else to be more Krishna conscious. There is plans, administration that will result in the protection and preachers and facilitate preaching. So devas are kind of like that. They're the big guys. They have got that position after lifetimes of austerity. They've worked really, really hard. And it's not that someone's going to come along and go, hey man, you know, join the bus party, hop on the bus, and leave. It's not likely. That's why even, you know, you don't necessarily find beautiful, handsome, rich people joining the movement. Because if someone has beauty or rich or all the opulences, what does that mean? It means you performed austerity to get them. It's not an accident. Prabhupada explained that, the scripture says. So someone who's very beautiful, they worked really hard to become beautiful. And then you come and say, oh, don't enjoy the beauty. You worked for a lifetime to become beautiful. And somebody says, actually, your beauty has no meaning. It's an interference, you know, give it up. Join, become a Hare Krishna and don't enjoy that beauty. It's very hard. It's like, what, I just spent a lifetime, you know, to get these things. So that's why you know, people that come, you know, generally there's some lacking, especially in the West where it's not our culture. There's something, you know, it didn't completely fly. If we'd gotten full sense gratification, we may not have followed that path. You know, generally, if you talk to devotees from the West, their stories always have some crisis or drama or pain in them for them to come to Krishna consciousness. Because if they would have gotten unfettered success, you know, like I was frustrated. My friends went on to become rich and famous, but it didn't. I know if I would have gotten the facility, I would not be here. Krishna frustrated it, so I had to think. So it's mercy. So the demigods, they're there because of huge sacrifice. And their services, they work hard. I mean, like, why a king is allowed to enjoy intoxication and sometimes flesh and many women? It's because a king, his services is that, like that, he has to go outside and die without turning his back. That's a king. Sitting there, enjoying beautiful women, nice drinks, nice food. But at any moment, someone can walk into that room and say, the enemy has come over the hill. And you have to walk out of the room, put on armor, put on your weapon, and get on your horse and go to death. And if the opposing force is superior to yours, you go in face of the sword. And you die, being cut to death and bleed to death on the battlefield without even thinking about it. That's a king. So for that, you get the enjoyment. Whereas someone in the city outside of the castle, okay, he doesn't have 18 wives and golden jeweler toilet, you know, but no one is going to come and knock at his door and you have to say, you have to come die now at the end of a sword. No, he's like, okay, can someone else kind of manage that? I'll pay my taxes, but, you know. And even if, you know, many times if citizens get conquered by an opposing force, I mean, sometimes if they're completely like the Huns or Genghis Khan or whatever, they may slaughter everybody, but generally not. They conquer them and they tax them, but they still let them live. So you can even survive, but the king, he must die. So that's the devas are like that. They're enjoying like crazy, but then the asuras do battle. They have to go, and they may get killed. So they're always in that what's called war footing. They're always on a war footing. And as devotees, we should also always be on a war footing. But the enemy is Maya. We're always on a war footing. When we wake up in the morning, we're on war footing to be serious about our sadhana and avoid Maya. So ultimately, we're like that. That's good quality of the kshatriyas. We also have to adopt that. Anybody else? Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gauranga.